Blog Talk.
I'm doing good. I've had a really hectic day, and after a hectic weekend and the beginning of the week, and but I'm here. We're here. We had some trouble, everyone, getting the show up this evening for some reason. Blog Talk decided not to schedule us, so we are here. We have two awesome guests with us this evening. Before I start off, I want to send our love out to Dee Gamble. Dee is a very dear friend of mine. She lost her mother over the weekend. The funeral is Friday of this week. And we all know, and that's our subject for tonight, we're talking about death, losing a loved one, how different people progress through the healing process and the loss. But we want Dee to know that we love her. We're here for her if she needs us. She knows where we are. Everyone hold her in their prayers. Tonight's guests, dear friends of mine, also Paula Wilkins and Marcia Jacobs, right?
Yep.
Hi, girls.
Hi, Jackie.
Hi, Jackie.
Thank you so much for joining us. As many of you know, my book will be coming out soon. And it deals with the things that I went through during the time I spent with my mother as she was passing from this life. I'm going to read a real short excerpt from that book, and then we're going to go into talking to the girls, and we're going to be just sharing with you and showing you how differently each person approaches death and how they deal with it, in the hopes that we touch someone's life, that we can make a difference for them. I think a lot about death now. Before, I convinced myself that it was in itself a beautiful thing. The flesh dies and the spirit soars. I still hold to this belief, but the beauty I thought came with death no longer holds truth for me. In fact, death is a nasty demon. It lingers with some, holding them in pain and fear. Those who cling to life, who are not ready to go, those who have to settle things, do not slip silently into the night. It does not play out like in the movies. They do not, from the deathbed, look to you, smile, and quietly slip away. With mother, it was traumatic, nothing but the rhythmic pace of the monitors and her labored breathing to fill the hours. I had gone to Florida expecting to help her recover from surgery. Instead, I went there to watch her die. For me, and we've talked about this many times, it is one of the most traumatic experiences I had ever been through in life. I had a lot of difficulty dealing with it, and I met these two women, and I'm going to start with Marcia. Marcia, I'd like you to share with our listeners your story, because you talk about touching someone's heart. You certainly touched mine, and I saw in you a resilient ability to move on and deal with the loss, and you inspired me and you helped me to heal. So if you wouldn't mind sharing with us you know, what you went through.
Sure. I first want to start off by telling you that no matter what we go through in life, my new saying is you need to count your blessings and not your losses. And I say that because in August of 2006, I lost my best friend and my husband. We'd been married for 22 years, had been together for 24, and he was a diabetic, and his kidneys had failed and was on dialysis. And an insulin reaction to me wasn't anything that was uncommon. He had them, you know, quite often. And that night was no different than any other night. I got in bed, and about 3:30 in the morning, I woke up to him and an insulin reaction next to me. And I was kind of angry at first that he was in one because it was 3:30 in the morning. And I got up and started helping him come out of the reaction. I was doing whatever medically I could do. And in the meantime, I called the paramedics. And I usually didn't do that. I always could get him out of them, get him out of it without it. So it didn't happen that night, though. I went downstairs to get my youngest daughter out of bed, and I told her that something just wasn't right with Dad. And as I was coming back up the steps, I heard him take his last breath. And the paramedics got here, and they had been here numerous times, and they just told me that, you know, let us get in there. You know, it's probably not what you think. And I sat out in my living room, and I was numb, you know, because everything that you knew in your life was completely different, and it was a big void. And so I went through the process of burying my husband, and I have had three children, and Alex was 15. Then I had a 17-year-old and I think he was 19. I can't remember now, but anyway. So we went through that process, and you know, I'm a type of person that I go through it, I deal with it. You know, I don't shove it aside, but I just know that for everybody else, I need to get back out of bed and I need to get going for the day and move on with my life. And so I kind of was ready for that next chapter. And my youngest daughter, Alex, had been diagnosed with a rare blood disease called TTP. And she had contracted it before Ed even passed away. My husband passed away. And she was down in Iowa City, Iowa. It was a state hospital or university. And they told us after they had treated her that time that this disease probably would never come back again. They treated her. She had to have she had to have all the platelets and stuff taken out of her body, put back in, and do this for like 17 days. She was in intensive care. And so it was supposed to never come back again, and everything was supposed to be fine in Alex's life. And Ed passed away in February of the next year of 2007. Alex's disease comes back, and she's taken by ambulance down to Iowa City again and spent almost 2 weeks in there, and Alex passed away, and she was 16. And when you talked about that, Jackie, about you laying there and you're sitting next to that person that's laying in that bed, you know, it's so true, because Ed did slip away from me, and I felt really guilt because I just thought, what didn't I do right that night? Alex was right next to me in a hospital with a CPAP on her face, begging me to have me take it off and that she would be good and that she didn't want it on there anymore. And I had left the room long enough because she just was stressing me out so much with just not getting any better. And I left the room, and they came out and told me that they were doing CPR on her. And Alex passed away one day short of 6 months after Ed passed away. And that brought me to my knees. And I have a lot of faith in God. And it really tested my faith. But I've gotten through it. I pray a lot. And I know that Alex is right here next to me. And I know that Ed is still my protector and watches over. But it's a tough road, and I think that's why I say that you got to count your blessings and not your losses, because you could either crawl in a hole like I wanted to do many days, or you just need to get back up and just keep fighting. And that's what I do in life, is I just keep fighting. So that's
wonderful.
Where I'm at, Jackie.
Paula, I'm going to move to you next, because I'm going to kind of do this in stages. If you would mind, if you would share your story with us.
Okay. I have a son named Lucas. He was 5 years old in March of 1996 when his life was taken. He was on his way to school. It was a kind of a strange day. It was March 6th, as I said. We had gotten a lot of snow for that day. For some reason, the school officials decided to call in the crossing guards early. When they did, my son was there alone at the crosswalk. It is my belief that my son knew how to use the crosswalk, because we lived one block from school, and he loved to push the button. Being a five-year-old pushing a button, he loved to do that. At the time that he pushed the button and the light changed, a man skidded through the light and hit my son and pulled him under his van and carried him for a block. After he carried him for a block under his van, realizing what he'd done, he jumped out of the van and ran probably 2 to 3 blocks away from the scene of the crime and was chased by some customers of a local drugstore and brought back to the scene. After that, there were police reports taken. There was one report that said that they thought they smelled faint alcohol. And then when I went back and questioned them on it, they're saying they never said it. The police said they never said it, but yet I had documentation to prove otherwise. They were also saying I did not have a case because they could not measure skid marks in the snow. That basically, because he was a child, they could not be sure that he had pushed the button. Okay, after that incident happened, and because I lived a block away, I did not hear the sirens. I did not hear anything. I was talking to one of my best friends on the telephone at the time when the school called in and said that my son had been hit and was on his way to the hospital. In my head, I thought, okay, kids get hit by cars all the time. They live through it all the time. My son, I thought, was scared. I thought maybe the most he had a couple broken ribs or a broken arm, but he's scared and he wants his mom. And I said, I'm on my way. I was told then by his teacher, who I was very close to, that no, I was not going to drive myself to the hospital. She would come and pick me up and take me to the hospital. When I got to the hospital, they probably had me wait. It seemed like an eternity, but it was probably 5 to 10 minutes before they would allow me to see him. And from what I understand now, that it was probably the best for me, because they wanted to clean him up before I saw him. When I went into the room, when he was in the ER room, he was surrounded by doctors and nurses, and I can't tell you how many people in there, but it felt like 20. And they were all talking and yelling at me to talk to my son and tell him to come back and that I was there for him and hold his hand. And when he got to the hospital, he did not have a heartbeat. However, they were able to get a heartbeat back, and it was kind of back and forth like that. And I just kept screaming at him, come back, you know, come back to me, Luke, come back, come back, come back. And they just stood there and worked on him. And they let me hold his hand, and they had me go sit in another room to calm down. And it was shortly after that that they pronounced him dead. After they did pronounce him dead, I was totally in a state of shock, because for some reason, I had always said that if something happens to this child, you can just put me in the funny farm, because the child was my world. I mean, I just loved to have my little boy around me. I was the one at kindergarten crying and begging that oh, let him only go a half a day, let him only go a half a day so he can be with me. And it was really difficult. And I did have the hospital agree to put Lucas in a room that so his grandmother and his father could see him and hold him, and that I could hold him, because I needed to hold him and hug him and love him and tell him goodbye. And I was able to do that. But he was already gone at that point in time.
Now, I have a question for both of you. And we'll go back to Marcia with this. Marcia, you had two different scenarios where you had dealt with your husband being ill for many years. You had taken care of him. And that, in its own way, you expect something like that to happen. But then when you're faced with the death of a child, it puts a different face on it. And you said it was not a slow process. You had to sit with her. Your faith, how did it affect your faith, and how did you find your way back to that faith?
Well, with Ed, when Ed passed away, I was probably more angry when he passed away, just because, you know, I felt he was 41 and he had a lot to offer in life. And so that offer to his friends, and I just thought to the world in itself that, you know, he was just a guy that, you know, was fun to be around. And so I was probably really angry at God that, you know, he decided to take Ed away when I just figure, you know, there's people out there that do really horrible things, and here's this guy that, you know, would do anything for anyone, and, you know, God took him away from me. And I was, you know, it was a selfish thought, but it was my thought. And so that was tough. And I went through the whole funeral and everything, and I sat there in that church, and in parts of me, I just thought, this just seems so unfair, because I had just lost my mom and dad just within a few years before that, and, you know, I just felt like I was in this world all by myself. And so Alex, my youngest, she was the one that would lay with me after Ed passed away, and she would get in bed with me at night. And Jackie, I didn't realize this was going to be this hard. And
honey, anytime you need to stop, you tell me. We can take a break, okay?
All right. So it would be Alex that laid in bed with me at night, and she would say, you know, Mom, I'll never leave you if you don't ever want me to move out. And, you know, and I would kind of joke, and I'd be like, oh, no, you know, you will move out someday. You know, you're not going to stay with me forever. But she just always was the one that always had her arm around me, and Paula can vouch for that. She always had to have her arm around me, always had to be kissing me, and it would just drive me nuts. And because my other two kids were not like that and still are not like that. But Alex was like, you know, when she wanted to be, she was a typical teenager, but when she wanted to be, she was just everything to me. And so when Alex got put back in the hospital in February of 07, I just never, ever in my wildest dreams thought that I was going to lose her. I mean, I thought they're going to take her down there. They're going to get her better. She's going to come home. And it's a fluke that it happened. You know, God's just tested me. And so I went through because I had just had hernia surgery. So I was driving back and forth and wasn't supposed to. And so I had just decided that I was going to just stay down there with her because she just wasn't doing very well. And I sat in that room and, you know, the first night she was more concerned about me. You know, Mom, you need to go out of here and get something to eat. And, you know, and then that last night, that Friday night, she just quit talking to me. And it was just, it was rough because I'd get up there and I would be rubbing her forehead. And, you know, I'd just keep telling her that I loved her and that she just needed to get better because I couldn't imagine life without her. And, same with Paula, you know, they were doing CPR on her for 45 minutes, and this poor doctor comes out and with tears just streaming down his face, and he just said, Marcia, I can keep doing CPR on her, but if I do get her back, it's not going to be the same. And I said, no, just, you know, let her go. And they had me come in, and at same with Paula. They had me just screaming at her and telling her to fight. But I knew in my heart that she missed her dad so much that I think if she had the chance to go and be with her grandpa and grandma and her dad, you know, who wouldn't want to go, you know? And so after that, and she passed, it was tough, and I really had a hard time. But it was so weird because we had just gone to church that Sunday before, and there was a song that was on there, and it was called With Hope. And it was the last song that Alex and I sang together. And she was back in the hospital that night. And we played that song at her funeral. And I'll tell you, Jackie, I had more peace at Alex's funeral than I did at Ed's. And it doesn't mean that I miss either one of them differently or anything. It's just that I know with Alex that I think that there was probably more things coming up for her that I don't think God wanted her to deal with or have to deal with. And so I think that's why God took Alex. And so I wasn't angry with God. I was probably more angry with God with Ed than I was with Alex, even though I missed them both, you know, a lot.
Right.
There is a point. I'm sorry. I'm trying not to cry.
I know. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay, sweetheart.
You hang tough, Marcia. You're doing fine.
I got Kathy next to me, so she's helping me.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
So this is when I was sitting at Mother's side. There was a point when I knew that the spirit was gone, and this is something I've always held in my belief that the spirit, the soul, leaves flesh long before the flesh ever gives up.
I believe that with Alex. Thing.
Let me read you another chart. So it is true then, this thing I have always known, the soul leaves the flesh long before the flesh lets go. I knew the moment when it had ended. I knew with certainty that the life of the spirit had found the peace it had sought for the past few days, and at last was free to take its place at God's side. I rejoiced in that knowledge and grew angry in that knowledge. He now had the love that had sustained me through life. He now had what I knew would break my spirit and my faith. He now had his child home, and I was a child left homeless. And I felt that. I was so overwhelmed. Paula, I know you were with your son in that room. Is this something that you experienced? I'm sorry, girls. I don't mean to make this hard for you, and you do not have to answer any questions I ask.
The thing that is different with me is that I've had a lot more time in between Luke's rebirthday and what's happened with Marcia. But I don't think that Luke was ever in that room, in the operating room. I have the belief that Luke's soul left him the minute that band took impact with his body. That was probably 2 to 3 hours prior to the hospital actually pronouncing him dead.
Right. Marcia, did you get a sense of that with either of yours?
Yep, I knew that with Ed. When I went down to wake up Alex downstairs, I just kind of had that feeling that it was not the same as they had ever been before. I mean, I had dealt with reactions for 24 years, and that one just felt so different for me. And I had never, ever gotten any of my kids out of bed when I dealt with reactions. I always just dealt with them, got them out of it, and then, you know, he got up and got something to eat, and then we just go back to bed. And that one just felt so strange, and I felt that as I was going down to get Alex that it wasn't going to be the same. It was going to, he was not there physically. You know, he was there physically, but his spirit wasn't there. I just had that feeling. And I did that with Alex too. I think when she quit talking to me, because she was a talker, wasn't she, Paula?
Yes,
She was a talker. She was a prankster. She was one that you could be around and you had to laugh.
Yeah, and so that last night when she just quit talking to me and wouldn't touch me, I knew then
that's odd because, I don't mean to talk over you, Marcia, I'm sorry. But Marcia and I had the conversation with Alex. It was like she was so close to her that if she stopped, Alex would hit her. run back into her back.
Yeah, that's true. That is so true. So, that's how I felt that last night was that I knew that she was already visiting heaven and there was not going to be any turning back for Alex. And Alex talked about her dad all the time and, wondered how he was doing and, what he was doing, wondered if he was fishing. So I think if Alex got a glimpse of that other side, that no matter how much she loved me and wanted to be here with me, that it was drawing her closer to God and to heaven, and I think that's where she wanted to be. And I really don't blame her for it. I just wish they were here with me.
Yeah. We're going to move to just a little bit lighter side to lighten it up just a little bit.
That's good.
Let's move to talking about when at the school, how we all met, because I just love that story. And Paula, I'm going to let you take it first.
Okay. What a freak story, okay? Okay. Our friends, Marcia and Kathy and her husband, have always been into kind of looking for spirits, and they would go to the graveyards and try and take pictures and get and whatnot. Well, I was working at a school when I saw an advertisement for come and to the haunting of Farrar School and be involved in the investigation. And I thought, how much fun can that be? The real deal. I thought it was cheap. And I thought, I'd spend that much money going to a haunted house with a bunch of made-up, people. I want the real deal. So I called up my friends, and they were, we're in.
Paula,
hold on just a second. Beth.
Yes.
Hello, darling.
Hello.
Hi, Beth.
With us.
Hello, ladies. I'm late. Sorry.
We're just
That's okay.
Paula has just started telling the story of how we hooked up at the school, so we're going to let her continue. I just wanted to get you in.
Okay.
So I told them about it, and they were in. I mean, immediately. Yeah, we'll do it. We're coming. So they came. And came for the weekend, and my boyfriend, who was kind of like, I don't believe in all of that. You guys go ahead and go and have fun. So we went, not really knowing what to expect. So we went in, and actually it was really kind of creepy and spooky, and I believe that our whole group experienced something in the school that night.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what made the night so memorable for me. Or Marcia, I believe. What happened
Beth was our leader.
Yes,
Beth was
with us all the time. And Beth was with us when we heard the shuffling of the papers, and we were going, what's that? And she was showing us on I don't know the technical terms, but on your screen, the different orbs and the different things that we were seeing and feeling. But what had happened was at the end of the session, we were told that there could be, like, kind of a round table, open type of discussion. Okay, I'm the question lady. I'll always ask a question. And so I had asked a question of you. And it was a question about my spirituality and the path that I was taking. And at that time, you gave me the answer, and it was almost verbatim of the same conversation we had on the way to the school, and we all got chills. We all looked at each other and went, whoa, that's weird, okay? Because you almost said the same exact thing that we were saying. And then nobody else was going to talk. Everybody was kind of hush-hush, and then Marcia had spoken up. Well, I think I asked about my son at that point. And I don't know if you had some inkling of him, but not a lot at that point. And then Marcia spoke up. And
we'll let Marcia take it from here.
Okay. You take it from there, Marcia.
Okay. So I asked the question and through my tears, because it had only been, you know, like 6 months since Alex had passed away, I said that I had lost two really important people in my life in the last year, and can you, you know, tell me anything about them, or do you see anything? And I'm sobbing at that point, and Jackie just kind of looks at me, and she's like, I'm sorry. She says, you know, she said, I just don't see anything right now. She goes, it just might be too soon, and want me to keep talking?
Yes.
Okay. So I was really disappointed, and kind of my heart was broken, and Beth, who's in the back of this gymnasium, leaned up against a wall. She says, Mom, I can take this one. And so she's like, if you guys want to follow me. So my friends and I, we went off with Beth and went up these steps, and she said that as soon as I had asked the question, that she had a young adult female that came and just kind of sat on her lap to get her attention and would not leave. And
what we're going to do is we're going to let Beth take it from here.
Okay.
Well, and, you know, Marcia will have to fill in the gaps, because the night is really a blur to me. This is the first time I have ever been contacted by a spirit outside of family. I never listen to my mom when she's doing a roundtable or a gallery reading. I always leave because she can pick up on me too easy. This night, I don't know why I stayed, and I sat back in the back of the room. I was eating cookies, and literally some girl sat on my lap and said in my ear, if you don't tell her, I'm going to haunt you for the rest of my life. And it was
bad.
You know, I wasn't scared, but it was funny. It was like she was serious. Like if I didn't speak up, by God, she was going to make me speak up.
And that is so Alex. That is so Alex.
And I remember when I told you guys that you did. And all the way upstairs to where we went and sat on the stairs, I was almost crying, because I know I did cry.
Yep.
And I want all the listeners out there to know, too, that through the night, I was with Marcia and Paula all through the night. Marcia did not once mention that she had lost anybody.
And I never
do. I would not have known that she lost her husband and her daughter.
No.
She was all night. She never said anything.
Nope. I never do.
No. And I don't know why she came to me. Maybe because I was younger, too. Maybe it was easier for her to take I don't know. I still don't know. It was just the night was such a blur. So we got to the stairs, and I proceeded to tell her that I knew it was a younger female, and I knew it was under the age of 18. I had a cousin that was killed in a car wreck that was 17, and I felt that it was around that age.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went. So Marshall will have to fill in the rest of this, though, because I can't remember the night too well, because it was like it wasn't even me.
Yeah, well, it was so exciting for me, and it still is. It's just like, it just seems like it was just yesterday that it happened. And so Beth is sitting there, and Beth had told us that she had just never, ever given a reading for someone outside the family, because she was always afraid it was going to be wrong, and or if she was wrong, you know, then she would just feel horrible. But she hit the nail on the head. She said it was a young adult female that came and sat on her lap to get her attention, that she said the person was very excited that I was there, and that was Alex, because Alex loved going on around Halloween and going to these graveyards when I would be petrified. She'd just, come on, Mom, let's go. And neither one of my other kids would go, and my husband wouldn't go, but Alex and I and our friends would go, and we would just have a blast. And she told Beth to tell me that she was happy, and that she was happy now. And she said something about the color purple, and I had just recarpeted part of my house, but I couldn't afford to do my bedroom, which was actually my oldest daughter's bedroom, which carpet was purple. And so that's the only thing I could get. And Beth went on to say that she wanted me to know that she was happy that I always wore my necklace. And I never wore necklaces and everything, and it wasn't until later that I figured out what Alex was trying to say. But then she goes on to say that, said that, you know, that Alex continues to give me hugs all the time, as she did that when she was here, and said that she liked it when I would journal to her. Well, Alex had a MySpace page, still does, but now for some reason I can't leave messages. But on those really dark nights, I would go and get on Alex's MySpace, and I tell you that was my big grieving process, was to be able to get on there and, you know, ask her questions. And it was just so odd that Alex brought that up, that I would journal her, because Beth would not know that Alex had a MySpace and didn't even know Alex before I even got down there that day.
No.
And she just said that that Alex had chances to cross over, but that she was afraid to go because she knew that I needed her so much, and, you know, which was so true. And she wouldn't leave me until I was ready to let her go. And Beth kept bringing up butterflies. This is the most ironic part of the whole night. And she asked me if this young adult female was into butterflies, and Alex wasn't. She was more she just wasn't the girly girl, you know, not at all. And she wasn't a tomboy, but she just wasn't. I mean, sweatpants were her thing, not pinks and all that. So I said, oh, no, she was not into butterflies. And Beth's like, okay, because butterflies keep coming up. Well, this is the honest to God truth. We come home the next day. Well, I first went to go back to Paula's mom's house that night and got in bed, and I'm laying there. And for the first time ever since Alex had passed away, I heard her come to me in my ear, and she said, not a necklace, Mom, a bracelet, Mom. Well, we had bought these bracelets for Alex while she was in the hospital, and they said Hope for Alex. And I wore that bracelet every single day. And Alex was coming through Beth to tell me that she was thanking me for always wearing that. And that's something that Beth would not have known. Well, we come home to Waterloo. It's October 22nd, 21st. It's the end of October. And I get out of my friend's truck, and I look over. And honest to God, I look over by this pine tree, and out comes this purple butterfly.
Oh, wow.
And I said to Kathy, I said, oh, my God, Kathy, there is a butterfly. And that butterfly goes away, and it comes back one more time for Kathy to see it. And I've never seen that butterfly in that tree before, and I've never seen it after that. And I really, truly believe that Alex wanted Beth to let me know that she was right here with me, and that butterfly was signifying. She wanted me to know about a butterfly because she was the butterfly in my life. And a butterfly signifies a new beginning, and it gave me a lot of peace. And I've told this to Beth many times, but, you know, she was a blessing to me that night, because some of those nights were really dark. And to know that Alex was right there with us that night, and to know that Alex was able to have Beth be the medium that brought us together, it was an awesome experience. And I truly was blessed to have Beth be there that night, because Beth has told me numerous times that she was not going to go that night, and she did.
No, yeah. I was not feeling good. So I was like, no, I can't go. And then something nagging in the back of my head's like, you got to go.
It was
literally last minute. I think within 10 minutes, I called my mom, like, I'm not going. I just can't go. Mom's like, well, you know, you still got 15 minutes. If you want to go, call me. And then I called, and I'm like, okay, well, I guess I'll go.
Paula, why don't you share with us then your part of that night?
My part of that night was, Beth did know that I had a son that passed away.
Yes, I did.
I guess I'm more free speaking of it than Marcia is. And then again, I had asked you during our roundtable discussion. But Beth had, she goes, now Beth helped me with this, because I was so in shock during this whole thing, this whole process. First
I
of all, what happened? Okay,
yeah.
Maybe you should take it from here, because I think you were almost describing my son to me.
Yeah, it was right after the reading with Marcia. Mm-hmm. And you and I were standing on the stairs and we were talking, and you'd asked if maybe I'd gotten anything from your son. And we were just talking, and then it dawned on me that I think it was 2 weeks. I don't know if you still have a copy of the journal page. I'd have to go back and look at my journal.
Oh, yes, I do.
And it just dawned on me that I journal a lot of my dreams, that if my cousin Robin, who passed away, is in any of my dreams, I always immediately write down every detail I can remember of that dream, because it's usually significant of something. And I had noticed a little boy in my dream. I just wrote down the description of the boy because he kind of stood back and he was younger, and he wasn't any boy that was in our family, because at that time we had no young boys that were 5 to 6 years old. And I just kind of wrote down the description, and then I wrote a description of the whole other dream. It was no significant. I just wrote it down. And so
I have it here in my hand.
Yeah, when Paul and I were talking, I said, wait a minute. And so I started describing what was in my journal, what I could remember off the top of my head that was in my journal. And I just started describing this little boy with these big eyes and these, like, literally butterfly eyelashes. His eyelashes were just so long. And just, I wish everybody could have seen the look on Paula's face, because it was like, whoa, wait a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely
don't have that. You wouldn't have got that from looking at me.
No,
he
doesn't. I mean, he looks like her, but he doesn't look like her. So, you know, the eyes definitely is not where I got them. And so we kept talking, and I said, well, I know that he went fast. I mean, and it was like he knew, and I told Paula that, you know, I'm getting that he's saying that he told you he was going to leave.
Oh, my
God. In some way, he said.
He did.
You know.
Can I interrupt for a moment?
Yes, go ahead.
About a month prior to his death, he started singing this little tune going, I'm a ghost, you're a ghost, we're a ghost, we're all ghosts. And then he asked me if we'd be a ghost family in heaven. And
wow.
That was about a month prior. I mean, this is a five-year-old little boy saying this, and I'm going, okay, this is kind of freaky, but, you know, let him go. But I just wanted to add that.
Yeah, well, and I also remember saying that he had, and I don't remember all the details, you know, because that night was so blur, but I remember him saying that it was almost like you weren't supposed to take him to school that day. And, like, somebody else was or something. And I don't know. The night was such a blur.
It was just so neat, Beth, because, you know, here we were. We come as these two unassuming people. Didn't expect anything out that night except to go through a school that was haunted, you know. And I had the experience where something had come and talked to me in my ear when Jackie had told me, just don't. If you don't want anybody to talk to you, just tell them not to talk to you. So I'm going,
yeah.
Don't talk to me, don't talk to me. And all of a sudden something comes in my ear, and I'm thinking, okay, I just told it not to. Well, I think, you know, so here we think we just go there that night just to have this little scary experience. And what we got out of it was such an awesome experience that, you know, it's really too hard to put into words. And just the friendships that have been formed, and, you know, how many times Paul and I have told our story to other people, because no one would believe it unless they were there that night.
Yeah.
And that's what was so neat. And that's why maybe it's a blur to you, but I think to Paul and I, it just seems like it was yesterday, because it just was such an awesome experience. Huh, Paula?
Yes. And yeah. I want to also go on to say is that even after that night, Beth had told me that her soul guide was, I believe, was helping you be in contact with this little boy, though you didn't know who the little boy was.
Yes.
And then you go to say, this is what Luke says. He says he brought us together because he knew I would have my sister do a render drawing. It was to give you some validation that the spirit does live on. Because remember, at that time, I was going through some difficulties with what my true beliefs were.
Yeah,
and it says, and that you are on a huge search right now for spiritual guidance and validation, and it is here. I'm not sure what this means, but he says you will understand. He said He also said that your daughter will be fine. Okay, that really freaked me out when you said that, because I, through this post-traumatic stress disorder that I was feeling, had this idea in my head I was going to lose my daughter at 7. And then
that's
you
right.
would no way know that.
No.
You would know, and then that she will be fine. And then it says he came to her, which means Luke came to my daughter a few nights ago, and they talked. He said she tried to mention something to you about this, but you didn't listen completely as you were busy doing something. He also says about 2 weeks ago he sat by your bedside and was comforting you as you had had a bad day. And not sure why he didn't say, I remember that day completely. I was laying there. I was very upset about something that had happened with a child at school, and I felt something on my hand to the point that it almost tickled, and I moved my hand. And that was very strange. And then you go on to say that you're sharing the render drawing of what your sister, what you described to your sister of my son, and then I get the drawing, and I show it to my daughter, and I said, who was not able to meet Luke in life, and said, who is that? And she goes, well, that's Luke. That's very bizarre.
Yeah,
that
well,
you were able to describe to your sister states away what you saw in your dream, and I show my daughter, who's only seen Lucas through pictures because he was passed away before my daughter was born, and I ask her who it is, and she said, that's Luke.
Yeah, and I want to explain to everybody is if I have an overwhelming urge for my sister to draw somebody, I will call my sister and say, Andra, somebody came to me, I need you to draw a picture for me. And that's what I did with Luke. I'm like, and I only told her small details, and she immediately picked up on who I was saying. Andra, are you on?
Andrea is with us. Let's bring Andra in now and let her continue with just that part of the story, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Andrea.
Hi. Well, it was really cool. Again, my sis called me, and she's like, you know, I need you to do a render drawing for me. And I had only done a few prior to this, but my sister and I, we have a really, really good connection. So she gives me slight details, and I just start drawing. And it was so neat because it's like, my hand took over. And every time my brain would want me to do something and I would start doing it, I'd have to erase it. I'm like, no, that's not it. This, it's supposed to stay like this, or no, it's supposed to be drawn like this. And it almost, I mean, it was just almost like a possession that I'm drawing this. And I finally get it to my sister. My sister's like, yes. So it was a really, really fantastic connection that night with my sister and I.
Well, and I want to let everybody else know, too, is that Paula wanted to send me a picture of her son, and I refused. I'm like, do not send me any pictures.
Yeah, you were like, don't do it. But I want you, and you wouldn't let me do it.
I would not let her. She wanted to so bad. I'm like, no, don't. I want to make sure that this is the kid that I'm getting. And so she wanted to send pictures so bad, and then afterwards she's like, can I please send it now?
One of the things about Andrea's drawing was, and we had not told a lot of people this, we did tell Paula, when she was drawing it, she put a dress shirt on the little boy, but it was killing her. She wanted to put one of those flannel shirts on him
mm-hmm.
with the little
yep.
squares and the different colors. It made her nuts. And I said, no, just put a dress shirt on him. And I wish now I had not stopped her, because then when we submitted the picture to Paula, I told her about, do you remember, Paula, that Andrea wanted to put a flannel shirt on him?
And you... I related that to his dad, because his dad constantly wore flannel shirts. And that's where I think the validation goes again, that, look, this is me. Look, you'll recognize this is me, you know, with that. Because that was just strange when she said the flannel shirts with the plaid. That just was like, oh, my gosh, here's another one. She would have never, ever known.
Yeah. One of the things that I know I've talked with both of you about is that when we make our life plan, before we even come to life, we choose those who are going to walk with us in flesh, in spirit, angels. They're all going to be our guides while we're here. When they die, they move on. But their commitment to us and to our life plan has not ended until our journey ends. So they're with us. Both of you girls, Marsha, let's start with you. Have you had opportunities on occasion to know that your husband and your daughter are still with you?
I would almost say more Alex than I would say Ed, and if Paula can tell you, Ed was a very quiet guy, where, you know, I'm more loud and, you know, I don't speak my mind as much as others do, but he really wasn't into this whole thing. I mean, he just was not, he didn't like me going to, you know, he was a believer. So, no, I can say that I probably have had more contact with Alex only because I think Alex and I were closer in the fact that we were the mother-daughter bond, and we were just tight. And
I remember, too, that night that one thing that Alex did say, and I repeated it, was that Ed had passed immediately, had crossed over immediately, and that he wouldn't be coming to her.
Right.
Not that it wasn't that he didn't want to, but Alex made it very clear that he wouldn't be, that he crossed immediately.
Yep, and I had actually taken my other daughter to a reader like an hour away from here, and she had pretty much said the same thing, that Ed had passed, and Ed was fishing in along Lake Michigan, and, you know, and so to me that was how Ed was. So I haven't had experiences like that, but with Alex there's been like little weird things, like, you know, just things that have happened in the house, or just things that I know would be Alex. Sometimes I can feel like I can feel her against my cheek, and if you knew Alex, that would be just so her, was being just so close to me all the time. And not that Ed didn't love me and Ed didn't want to, you know, be around me. I just think it was more of a bond that I had with, you know what you're like with your daughters. I mean, it's just, it's a bond that it's hard to break, and, you know,
right.
Your spouse is one thing, but your sons are your daughters, and, you know, my bond with Alex was pretty tight, and so I've had more experiences with Alex than Ed.
What about you, Paula?
Yes, I've had a few different experiences with my son. Let me have to think back. I can give you several. One of them was so strange that it was coming on his true birthday. His birthday to Earth, because now I think of his death as his rebirthday when he got to go home, and that really is helpful for me. But we were coming on his birthday, and we were having a conversation in the house. Where were we going to go to celebrate his birthday for lunch? Okay, his favorite was Chuck E. Cheese. But yet, we were talking about going out for Chinese, okay? And walked in my son's bedroom, and the whole bedroom smelled of Chuck E. Cheese. I mean, that is definitely a smell like of no other. My friend Kathy came by a little bit later then, and I said, "You've got to come in here." And I didn't tell her anything. I said, "What do you smell?" And she said, "Chuck E. Cheese. Did you have Chuck E. Cheese in here?" And I said, "No." And that was him saying, "You take my sister to Chuck E. Cheese. You don't take her out to Chinese for my birthday. You take her to Chuck E. Cheese." There was another incident that I had that...
Paula, I'm going to stop you just for a minute. Guys, we had trouble with Blog Talk tonight. They did not have our show scheduled. We will be running into archive this evening when our time is up. We'll keep the chat room open, but we have a couple more questions, so we'll be running into the archives. Download the show later to hear the end of this. I promise you it will be worth your time and effort. And before we run out of time, I want to make sure that I thank each of you for joining us tonight, because these women had a story to tell and to share with us, and it's about life. It's not about the loss of a loved one. It's about living life after the loss of a loved one. So if we lose you anytime soon, remember the archives. Paula, continue, hon.
Okay. Another time was I used to always tell Lucas, the car doesn't move till the seatbelt's on. And he knew that. He knew that. The car doesn't move till the seatbelt's on. Well, after he passed, I was in a hurry to go somewhere, and I'm sure it was close to home, and I started backing out of my driveway, and I heard his voice plain as day say, Mom, put your seatbelt on. There were a couple experiences where I had people in my home babysitting my daughter where they heard his voice go, Mom, Mom. And then I had a few visits in my dream state with him. And a couple of them at the beginning were kind of strange, and then they became better and better because I was so angry at the beginning after he died. I was so, so angry with the person that hit my son because he would not apologize to me, and I was so angry that the Lord would take my precious gift, and I didn't understand. I was so mad at God. It was just... It was unbelievable. My faith was truly shaken at that point. But as I got better and started feeling better about the situation, I one time experienced a truly, truly lovely dream, and it was Lucas. And we had a dog that was getting ready to pass away in December prior to Lucas's death in March. And I had to explain to him about death and how this dog was going to pass away, and we would love her, and we would miss her, but we would have her memories. And for some reason, he was able to communicate. He did the sign language thing with her, where he would communicate with this dog who couldn't hear, and she would follow him around. And I had dreams that my son and the dog were, like, out running in the field. And I truly believe that that was more than a dream. I truly believe that that's what they were doing. So those were a couple of my experiences, and it's pretty neat. And I try to keep myself open to them, and things from everyday life kind of muddles up my head sometimes. And I have been trying to practice the white light exercise, and Beth gave me an idea about another thing that I can do about asking him to meet me at a particular place. And I've been trying both of those exercises, so... The white light exercises has been helping me stay calm. Now, if I can get another visit, I'd be very happy.
I just want to ask both of you just real quick. Marcia, we'll start with you. What would you share with our listeners about this whole, what did you take away from it besides the loss?
Yeah. The whole experience of explain to me what you mean by that. What do you mean by the
losing a loved one and continuing in life?
You know, you are so overcome with such sadness when they're gone, and you know, you when it first initially happens, you know, I had already lost my mom and my dad a few years before Ed, and had lost, you know, I've lost a lot of people in my life, and so when I lost Ed and Alex. I guess it wasn't like I didn't go through the grieving period, because I did. But I just really think that God puts us all on this earth for just a short period of time. And, you know, it's what we do in between that time that is just, it's so important and so precious. And I think that Ed and Alex touched people that we didn't even know that they had touched. And to me, I guess what I take away from it is the fact that you have to live each day to the fullest, and you can't be angry about things that you don't have control over, and you need to think positive about people and just do the best that you can every day in life. And don't, my dad used to always tell me, don't sweat the small things, sis, and I really believe that. I just think that you just need to have a lot of faith in God. And
Matt just did it, so.
So that's, I guess that's where I'm at.
Paula?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That's all I do. That's all I do. Better be.
Yes?
Would you share with us what you've taken away from this experience?
What it kind of way?
Okay. It took me many years to get to the point that I could say, I loved my son. I truly believe that this was the first human being I ever really felt that I loved. And I was so angry that he was taken from me. It took me about 3 years into the grieving process to get to the point to say, I'm glad I had him for the 5 years that I had him. I thought to myself, even though he had to go home early for me, you know, in my idea, I would have liked to have him a much, much longer time, but I'm glad I got to have him at all. And if I want to look for him, I need to look in my heart because that's where he lives. He will live forever in my heart. He's not gone from me. He's just gone from this earth.
And that's true because I had a guy come over that wanted to, when I went to buy headstones, and he had lost his wife to cancer, and, you know, you kind of get on that conversation, and, you know, he said, you know, you'll get to a point where you'll think that you'll be happy for the time that you did have him and not for the time that you did not have him. And I started to cry, and I said, oh, I don't think I can ever get there. And he's like, you will. He says, you will. And it so happened then that just probably not even 6 months ago or 9 months ago, I was in a situation where it was like all of a sudden I was so thankful for the 16 years I had Alex and the 41 years or the 24 years I had Ed, that it wasn't the fact that the time that I didn't have him, I was just thankful for the time that I did have him. And that, you know, God puts them there for a reason, and you really need to learn from those people.
That is so true.
And one more thing I want to add, too, is I was in a group called Compassionate Friends, and it was a support group for parents and grandparents who were grieving the loss of a, you know, son, daughter, grandchild. And I had a very wise woman in that group tell me that, honey, don't look at it as their death day. Look at it as their rebirth day. Think of it as a big party that they got to have when they went back home. And that put my mind frame at a whole different perspective for my son. And I was like, he loved parties.
Mm-hmm.
And if I could just think of him as going up to this major awesome party that, you know, everybody was celebrating, everybody was singing, and it was a wonderful place and a peaceful place for him to be, that helped put me at ease.
Yep.
Well, you know, each of us has a dream or a vision, a quest that we have to accomplish while we're here in the flesh. These stories tonight, I don't know for you girls, but for me, it's opened that door to healing so much more, because you're sharing a personal insight into what's created the people that you are today. And I've had the opportunity to know you personally, and I know how you've touched my life. And I'm, you know, by saying we're human with all of our imperfections and the quirks that come with that title,
mm-hmm.
that we hurt, that we grieve, but life continues and we continue to touch other people with our stories. Isn't that what it's about?
Yep.
Do you know how many people you've touched tonight by saying, I hurt and I found joy in the end and faith as my foundation? You're giving them hope that they too will be able to survive this moment when it faces them. And I just want you both to know what a blessing you are to all of us who love you and adore you and count you as one of our friends.
Thank you.
And I want to thank you so very, very, very much for sharing your stories with us. Is there anything either one of you want to share before we sign off for the night?
No, I think I've said everything. I want to tell you and Jackie and Andrea that, or you and Beth and Andrea that you guys are probably meant to come into Paul and I's life that night, that I think we were both at different times in our grieving, and even though it had been longer for Paula, I think that grief is grief no matter how long it is, And I think to have your family now become part of our family and to share something with us that we never, ever thought was possible was probably the most blessed event that I had had in a long time. And so I want to thank you for even putting that on that night in far Iowa that no one had heard of and sharing with us a part of our family. You know, my daughter was there that night, and I'm blessed to know you guys, and I appreciate it.
Okay, I've got to get my tissues.
Oh, I'm sure my sisters probably bawled too. Between my mom and my sisters, they're the biggest crybabies. Me, Beth, is not a crier. So.
Well, good, Beth.
Jackie, I did want to ask you, did you find my email that I sent you?
No, I didn't, dear.
Oh, it was so good, too, because it took me so long to compose it. It was basically a letter of thank you and gratitude.
Yep.
Because you are there for me, and you know I've experienced a death of a friend here recently and have had a lot of problems with the issues surrounding that, and that you have been there for me. And when I'm calling up and going, I don't know how to deal with this, you have been so instrumental in helping me through that process and put my mindset where it needs to be.
Yep.
And focus back on what it is here and what she has there and what Luke has there and how we need as human beings here on this earth to let go so they can grow.
Yep.
And I didn't know all of these things, and I've learned them through you and your family, and I just think that it is such an awesome, awesome thing to have knowledge of, that we need to stop being angry. We need to learn how to love. We need to love the ones that we have and just
to count your
embrace
blessings,
that and
your losses.
Get over it.
Right.
That's
right.
What my girlfriend used to say. And get over it.
Yep.
We did that on the phone the other day. I was like, Paula, I just want to tell you that she's saying get over it.
Yep.
And she's like, oh my God, she would so say that.
Yep, that is the truth. Shelley would.
Uh-huh.
She
would say, get over it. And mm-hmm. And so that helped me, and to know that I can still have connections with my loved ones that passed on, and that I can still be helpful to those who are grieving and help them answer questions. And my experience is that when you experience the death of a loved one, you received a wound. The wound will eventually turn into a scar, but you're always going to feel something, but it won't be as intense as it was at the time that it happened.
Yep.
Death takes its proper perspective. It takes time.
Exactly.
It can heal if you allow it to heal. If you find a way to find the joy, as Marcia said, in the time that you had with them while they were in your life. Because let's face it, every minute with any person you love deeply
mm-hmm.
is a blessing.
Yes.
It is
Amen,
a gift.
Sister.
And if we can learn to hold on to that, learn to embrace those memories
yep.
of their life shared with us, we allow that healing to take place.
Yep. And it doesn't mean that you love them any less, you know, once you're able to kind of, it's never that you move on with life. It's just that you move, I always think that I've just moved to the next chapter. And, you know, I don't think that there's a day goes by that I don't think about both of them. But I just think that your mind gets you to a point where you can move to the next chapter, and your faith gets you to the next chapter. And that's what you got to do. You just got to, put them back in that chapter number 3 and move to chapter number 4 and live with the living and not live with the dead, because they wouldn't want you to be like that. They would not want you to be sad every day and stay in bed and not move on with your life. That's not how they lived when they were here.
Yeah, okay, girls. Again, you were such a blessing tonight. We've run over into archive time. I want to, if you have like a MySpace, if you could just tell us now how to connect for the listeners that want to connect with you and share their thoughts on the show tonight with you. If you'll give them your MySpace, we would appreciate it, or an email that they could contact you if you're open to that. So, Marsha, let's start with you.
Well, my MySpace, you could probably find me under Jackie's. I don't even know how you even go about the MySpace thing, but I'm Jackie's friend and I'm Beth's friend. I don't know if I'm Andrea's friend. She probably doesn't want me to be her friend.
You don't want to be her friend. Andrea's scary. You got to watch out for her.
I've seen her pictures. She is a scary girl.
She is. You got to watch her.
You met her. You met her at Villisca.
I tried to talk to her.
You were at Villisca. That's why they're scared of you.
But you can go through there, or you know, go through Beth. Paula, we're trying to get her set up in a MySpace, but she hasn't gotten one yet. So,
Paula,
that's because somebody stole my identity.
Well, I'll tell you what, everyone listening, if you will contact me at www.myspace.com/barnma, BARNMA. I will relay any messages that you have for these ladies. I also want to take a moment to remind you, WISP registration is going to be opening soon. This is almost done. We had to deal with some things over the past couple of weeks, and we're just getting back to getting everything up and running. www.wispexpo.com. If you are having activity in your home and you are in Iowa, Missouri, Illinois, Ohio, Kentucky, Tennessee, Kansas, we do have affiliate teams all over the world, as well as the official IPRA team. We will be happy to assist you. You can contact us through what is that email, Beth? IPRA Inc. or IPRA Info?
IPRA Inc. Which one?
The info.
The info is just info at IPRAInc.net.
And for me personally, you can go to JackieCarpenter.com, JACQUI Carpenter.com, and it will take you directly to my site. Para Monthly Review is up. All the archived newsletters are up. Feel free to read them and explore. Marsha and Paula, thank you so much again for joining us this evening. You know my phone
number.
Thank you,
Jackie.
If you need me, you call me, and we'll do something again soon with all of this, okay?
Sounds great.
Hey.
Good night, everyone.
You know I'll take you up on it.
All right, bye, guys. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you so much all for joining us. We hope to see you next week. Robbie Thomas is scheduled to be our guest. There is a chance he will have to cancel. We do not know yet, but we will let you know as soon as we know. God's blessings. Have a great evening. Bye.